Hey-ho, it's Dave Wine here, and it's Morning Coffee Notes. Yo. Okay, anyway, where are we? We're in Berkeley, California, of course, and it's November 1st, 2005, and just came back today from the Microsoft, what they call Windows Live and Office Live. And it was a, God, was it a botched announcement? It was terrible. Probably the worst software demo I've ever seen. And I've been in the software business now for pretty close to 30 years. Not quite, 28 years or so, a long time. And I've seen some pretty bad demos. I've even done a few. But I've never seen anything quite this bad. It was bad on bad on bad on bad, every which way you could imagine. And it was, but however, if you were to like look at the way the blogosphere covered it, and the way, and the, you know, the professional press sort of that is being reflected through the blogosphere, you totally couldn't tell that the thing was botched. And it was either a brilliant act of treachery or just an incredible stroke of good luck on their part that the internet connection into the announcement room that all of the bloggers and the press people were using went down at the point where the demo went completely south. And suppose there are a bunch of different theories on why that happened. Could have been that somebody shut it off because the problem with the demo, one of the problems was a connectivity issue, and they might have just decided to sort of triage us out of the picture, which is actually something I'm familiar with. It kind of happened to me at GnomeDex when I did the keynote demo. And there were just so many people in the room using the network and basically using the same net that I was using to try to do the demo that I couldn't do the demo. I mean, which, you know, if I were to write an addendum to my How to Demo Software for Fun and Profit document, I would add another addendum there that says, if you're doing an internet demo, and like, when aren't you doing an internet demo? That you should have two net connections, one for the stage and one for the audience, and they should be completely separate. The paths out to the net should be totally separate so that, you know, if the audience is streaming, which I think is what was happening at the at GnomeDex, if there are 15 people in there with microphones streaming the presentation, that doesn't interfere with the presentation itself. So, you know, because people just will always think of ways of using up more bandwidth. On the other hand, if it was done on purpose, which would show an incredible presence of mind to actually have done that and pulled it off, and then it was even better because when the Microsoft spinners came out to walk amongst us, and those included Ray Ozzie and Vic Gundotra, Charles Fitzgerald. There may have even been a few others, but these were all the people that I spoke with after the announcement. They came out and said, "Why did you guys stop blogging?" And you know, I didn't look behind their back to see if their fingers were crossed. But it was done, if that was the way they did it, it was done just absolutely beautifully. But if but nothing's going to stop the word from coming now, and I'm not trying to whether the demo worked or not, long term probably isn't the issue. And kind of the question is, what did they announce? And we know that we now have a new word called live, and if you apply it to things like Office and Windows, that you that means something, but they didn't provide a technical definition. And what is it? Is what is live software? Is it like will I just like know it when I see it, or is there a way of telling the difference between live software and not live software? And well, I suspect that it's more of a marketing thing than anything that is serious. I noted that when I was blogging the event today, that seemed pretty live to me until the net went down, of course, when it went dead. It's very hard to know what this exactly means. I mean, 5 years ago, we were all sitting in a room up in Redmond, listening to the story of Hailstorm and .NET and web services and SOAP and so forth. The demos there went a lot better, and it was a whole different atmosphere then than today. I mean, at that time, Microsoft was still on top of the world, and or at least appeared to be on top of the world. And the dot-com bust hadn't happened yet; it was still, boom times, and it sort of looked like maybe this was going to be the next sort of wave, next crest of the next wave, or whatever, or not. I mean, I had a wholly different impression, and I think I may have even written about it that it just totally seemed like oh, they didn't understand what they were talking about, and long story, didn't work. Okay, it didn't work because what they were proposing to do required a lot of trust, and they like were being convicted of antitrust. And the pun isn't unintentional, I'm sure, that just couldn't trust them, and they were asking for huge trust. And whoa, what a disconnect that was. And at the time, Google was like, just a search engine, and a great search engine, and we were all really excited about what they were doing. And they're they hadn't even become even the slightest hint of evil out of Google at the time. And now the tables have turned quite a bit, and Microsoft is no longer the menacing threat that they were in 2000, or appeared to be in 2000. And today the rising threat in the software industry is Google. And Google behaves ever more arrogantly and more willfully independent of the rest of us, and contrary to our interests. They don't listen. They don't return phone calls. They don't ever say anything to us that is what anybody would want to hear. I mean, this whole business with news.com and icing them out for a while. What arrogance! What unbelievable! Where do they, who do they think they are? I mean, unbelievable. Or the bit about the book publishers. I mean, also so corporate and willfully violating the law. I mean, I guess they think they can get away with it, but I don't root for teams like that. They are not, I'm not on their side. And they need some competition, and they need it badly. I need them to have competition badly. They don't talk to me. They don't listen, and they don't talk to me. And what choice do I have but to look for other places? Because I want to be creative, and I want to do things, and I need to have that kind of technology in the mix of what I do. And if they won't work with me, what do they think I'm going to do? Just pack up and leave? Nope, I'm not going to do it. So I look for other places where I can get the work done that I want to get done, and I look to, therefore, I look to Microsoft, and I look to Yahoo, and I look to Apple, and and I look to the left and the right. I look to the other companies, I'm not a company, so say other companies is not accurate, but I looked at companies that make products that I find interesting and that are approachable, that are sort of like, you know, I would even talk with Google. I would work with Google, but they have decided they don't want to work with me. So so I want to see Microsoft pull something here out. I want to see them actually make a difference and provide some of the services that Google could be providing if they weren't actually ignoring us or trying to dominate us, and or just don't even think about us or whatever. So that's one of the reasons why I feel good about, for example, using a Macintosh today. Not because I'm like wanting to like stick my nose, you know, thumb my nose at Microsoft, but because it's important that I understand what Apple does. Because Apple is one of the places where because Apple will be challenged by Google sometime pretty soon, I'm pretty sure of it, that I just sort of see the movement in the direction that I think Google will try to do something like an iTunes. And I think that they will, if they don't themselves produce something that's handheld like an iPod, that they will have some kind of way of working with mobile devices like that. And Apple will have a choice between Google and Apple. And I think that a lot of the people who just sort of like love to, they like to believe that the technology industry can do no wrong, will all of a sudden have to make a choice between Google and Apple. And that will make kind of interesting contrast, because, you know, the mythology is that they're great for different reasons, you know, but to see them in competition, they will be in competition. I don't doubt that they will. I think Google's part, I mean, everybody looks at Google and says they're aiming at Microsoft. Well, I don't think that that's all that they're aiming at. Okay. I think they aim at more than that. So anyway, all this is just sort of what I call a pre-ramble. I'm rambling a little bit, just sort of giving you a little bit of background, sort of an idea of where my thinking is, because I have a very, very, very specific idea, which is something that either Microsoft or Yahoo could implement, and it would immediately put a lot of pressure on Google, and in a very, very good way. And I like the fact that it's something that either Microsoft or Google could do, so that neither one of them feels the impulse to be arrogant about this, that thinks that I'm just, you know, like kissing up to them and that they're the only act in town, because these companies get that way. They really do sort of like, you know, get very into their own fumes. And the only chance that that they really have, I think, you know, they probably think that it's the only chance we have as little guys, but it's really their chance. The only chance they have is when they have enough competition, so that forces them to look outside. You know, like, so Microsoft very reluctantly has to think about Google, even though really nothing that they announced today is responsive to Google. There has to be. You know, it's sort of as if you were running a political campaign. You were a Democratic candidate running against a Republican candidate, and for, let's say, for president of the United States, and somehow you believed that you could run that campaign and never talk about your opponent, never try to take a voter away from that opponent. Well, you'd be kidding yourself. That's just not the way it works. Well, you know, so like it's stylish to say, to boast that, well, okay, well, we don't have to like be envious of Google. We can just sort of like coexist with them, and we don't have to compete with them directly. Well, let me tell you this. You do. And you don't have a choice. Microsoft has a search engine, and it's a good thing that they do. Their search engine can't always be playing catch up with Google. It has to leapfrog them. It has to move out in front. It doesn't matter if within 2 weeks or 2 hours or 2 years, you'd like to see something 2 years, you know, it, that Google matches you. But it's important that you lead every once in a while, that you be in control of their destiny instead of vice versa. Because, and I think that many, if not most of the people at Microsoft have no memory of ever being there, okay? It may be that Microsoft itself has no memory of ever being there, of ever calling the tune for in a competition, because Microsoft got to where it is by basically picking on people, picking on companies, competitors, and just being relentless at competing with them until the other guy gave up. And it's really kind of amazing that how many times that happened, to the point where they just got that everybody else went away, and then they kind of drifted. They kind of had no purpose. They had nothing to do until Netscape came along. And the way they describe it at Microsoft is that they're really into taillight chasing. They like to have some taillights to chase. Well, the taillights, no more. You can't chase Google that way. It doesn't work. Because Google plays the game under different rules. They're not of the same generation as Microsoft. So when Microsoft was able to chase the tail of Lotus and Ashton Tate and Borland and Novell, you know, even their hardware OEMs, to some extent, they were chasing them. And of course, they ran down and completely defeated IBM, which wasn't a company like them. It's more like that. Google is more like Microsoft to IBM. If you think about it, there's a ton of parallels. I mean, you know, Google software runs on Microsoft's operating system. At least the client stuff does, not the back end, not the server stuff. But, you know, Google largely ignores the Macintosh platform. Their stuff that runs on client machines runs on Windows. And but that doesn't bother Google. It doesn't matter any more than it mattered to Microsoft that their software ran on IBM hardware. Doesn't matter. I mean, as long as you're controlling the game, as long as you're controlling your own destiny and controlling the destiny of your competitors, it doesn't matter that you run on their hardware. Microsoft effectively, it isn't Microsoft hardware, because Microsoft can't exert any control over Google through that hardware. So it really is everybody's hardware, Windows. Windows, you know, of course, is software, but, you know, to the next layer up, it's hardware, right? Well, there's the trick. You have to turn Google into hardware, and you have to start building on it, okay? And you have to make it generic. You have to make it so it doesn't matter whether you use MSN or whether you use Google, but you have to make it so that you can use MSN where you can't use Google, and that's really simple. While Google is still largely a search company, because they're transitioning now, they're morphing, and given a couple more years, they won't be just a search company anymore. I mean, they've got maps, they've got mail, they've got instant messaging, you know, they're going to have a music store pretty soon. You know, they have broadband, some more than just music probably in their future. They're playing with all kinds of things. They have enough resources now. Their stock is valuable enough so they could buy some seriously huge things. They could become almost anything they want to overnight, but they haven't become anything yet. Their stock is still valuable, but if you can kick them hard enough, you can make that stock go down in value. This is the way competitors think about stuff like this. They think in terms of, how do I weaken my enemy before they get a chance to kill me? Well, here's how you do it. You know the Google API? Do you remember the Google API? If you go back and read Scripting News around the time that the Google API came online, you'll see how incredibly excited I was about that, because it meant to me that I would be able to create applications as if I worked at Google without having to work at Google. Okay? In other words, I would be able to use the strength of their back end and their network to build services that I could then turn around and give to other people, because I wasn't planning on charging for any of this stuff. But, you know, I've talked about, this is my how to make money on the internet pitch. You know, it doesn't matter linearly whether I charge you for this or that or the other thing. As long as there's a way for me to make just large amounts of money, I don't care how I get paid. I just care that I do get paid. And so it gave me the opportunity to build applications on top of their back end. And their back end was great, and it still is. Their search engine, although it was greater then than it is today, relative because it hasn't improved very much since then. So for the day, I guess it was like 2001 or so was when the Google API came out, or maybe it was early 2002. I think it was early 2002 is when the Google API came online. And at the time, I mean, it was just breathtaking, except there was a limit. And the limit meant that you couldn't build commercial applications on top of it. I couldn't build something that even scaled up to the level of scripting news without a huge amount of kludging and probably, you know, at least stretching their terms of use. And I did stretch the terms of use, but they didn't object. But if I really pushed it much further, they would have probably. Who knows? But the fact was is that there were these horrible limits on it that meant you had to stop thinking creatively very, very, very soon. In other words, you could only think about like putting, I couldn't put a feature into software that I then in turn like Manila or Radio or my RSS reader or whatever. I couldn't put a feature in there that depended on their search engine, on their API. Because I didn't have the right to resell it. Even if my products were like minimally profitable, which they were. In fact, they were running, selling at a loss. Even I just, they didn't have terms for me and they didn't return phone calls. So there was no business relationship possible with them. So what Microsoft or Yahoo should do is clone the Google API, literally clone it. In other words, go for complete compatibility. It's not hard to do. It's not a very complicated interface API. It wouldn't take more than, you know, it wouldn't take very much in the way of resources. Take one engineer a month to do it, basically. And don't put a limit on it. Just take the limit off. As I said to Charles Fitzgerald and Vic Gundotra today, is like, don't treat it as bad news that, you know, let's say I'm doing 500,000 queries a day, which is a lot of queries for a guy like me. I mean, a lot, a ton. I'm not going to be doing 500,000 queries a day, okay? But suppose I were. Would you even notice? You wouldn't even notice. It wouldn't make the slightest bit of difference to you. If there were 100 people like me doing 500,000 queries a day, even that wouldn't make a difference. But let's say, okay, I was getting up to 40 or 50 million queries a day. Now you're starting to notice. You're starting to have to dedicate hardware to serve me. Now you could say, well, that's bad news. Somehow I've got to pay for that, right? But that's not true. You don't have to pay for it. And you also don't have to see it as bad news. You could see it as good news. You could pick up the phone and call me up and say, Dave, wow. That is so cool. You're doing 30 million queries a day. You must have something going that is just tell us about what you're doing, okay? Now, this I could either tell them or not. Let's say I don't have to tell them, but I might tell them. And they say, well, whether or not you want to tell us, let's just put it this way. How about we figure out a way to make some money together? Why don't we figure out how both of us can make some money? And then I fly up to Redmond and we sit down at a conference room table. Maybe we go out to dinner. They buy me a nice dinner because frankly, there aren't very many of me, so they can afford. This is a company, by the way, with $60 billion in cash. Yeah, they can afford to buy me dinner, okay? They take me out to dinner and we sit down and they say, geez, you're like one hell of a guy. How do you do it? You know, and maybe after a couple of, you know, Bloody Marys or margaritas or just a glass of wine or whatever. And enough stroking, I decide to tell them what I'm doing. Okay, now they've learned about a new market. Maybe they can do it too. Or maybe they can find somebody else to do it or whatever. Maybe they can compete with me. I know, not a very nice thing to do. But on the other hand, maybe they could also say, how about we partner? How about we both figure out a way to make a bunch of money off of this new way of creating flow that you figured out how to do? And so, in other words, you treat it as good news, not bad news. You don't say it's bad news when you start using up resources. You say it's good news when you found another use for search engines. The most important thing is you've now got me and 100 other people, or maybe 500 other people, actively building applications off of your back end, okay? And we're not building applications off your competitor's back end. So if there are any ideas out there, you know we're going to be working our butts off to try to find them. And when we find them, you're going to be the one that buys us dinner, because you're going to be the one who knows that we did it, and they aren't going to know, okay? Aside from that, I'm more likely to come do business with you because you started out by doing business with me. And Google hasn't gotten it yet. And today, Google is still dependent on that search engine, and they're not likely to be able to take that kind of risk with it. Microsoft, on the other hand, has a lot more flexibility because Microsoft is a far more diversified business, and frankly, the search engine is a teeny little piece of what Microsoft is. At the same time, Yahoo, which is also suffering hugely in competition with Google, also has a search engine and could do exactly the same thing, and is showing signs of this kind of outward entrepreneurial attitude, where they wouldn't have in the past been able to get over their own internal point of view to be able to work with people outside their own company. The arrogance would not have allowed them to do it because of the competition with Google, because they are scared of Google, that inspires them to be more creative and to be more outgoing and to look for ways to work with people who may be able to give them an edge up on Google. It makes you be more creative. And of course, what I expect to see at the same time is, once we get one or two of these other companies, Apple or Yahoo or Microsoft, to be more effective at working with developers, then of course the others will, and of course so will Google. And this is where, because for example, Google, I use more than just the search engine at Google. I use Gmail. I mean, my main account, dave.winer@gmail, is dave.winer@gmail.com now. That is, and the reason why Gmail is so good is because they have Hotmail, which isn't that good, but it's getting better. We saw a demo today of the next version of Hotmail. It looks pretty good. That's the other thing, is that Microsoft's demos sucked so bad that there were some really good things in there that you kind of didn't even notice because the other things sucked so much. The mail was good, and they also had this really neat way of sharing folders across different users, which I could really see using with a bunch of people that I work with. I really could see doing that. It seems very powerful. There were some other things that were worth looking at. We do a lot better. I guess the moral of the story, this is the continuing story of my writings and rantings, going back to DaveNet in 1994, is that we all, and it goes back before that too. I wrote about this stuff when I was, although I didn't have the bully pulpit that I have today. I wrote about this stuff in the 80s when I was doing Userland IAC Toolkit, with the idea of talking about making databases that were just databases and word processors that were just word processors, and giving the users the ability to tie everything together with scripts, which is, by the way, where the name Userland came from, was that we're going to create a world where users have all these wonderful tools that they can connect up in whatever way they want to, and they don't even have to make feature requests to get the features that they want, which is oddly enough an idea that came from Unix. And along the way from coming from Unix, I heard Bill Gates give a speech in like 1980 or 81, where he was talking about integrated software, which was the rage at the time. It was more like 83 actually, and where he said, well, we just need to tie this stuff together with scripts. So, you know, that's been my rant, and that's been my goal all along, is that we find ways to make things work together so that, you know, we can, like, don't have to get stuck. And I hate the sort of closed off corporate arrogance that comes. It's a very Silicon Valley thing, although it's also a very Redmond thing, and it's a very mainframe computer thing. Computer people generally tend to think the world revolves around them, and the press and the culture tends to reinforce that for them, tends to tell them that they're right, that they're, you know, their shit doesn't stink, and that they're the most wonderful things ever to come along, until the next wonderful thing comes along and they've forgotten all about you. So, you know, we might want to just forget about that one and just start systematically getting better at working with other people, because ultimately you're going to need to do that if you want to stay in business. So anyway, that's my nugget. Of course, look for many other opportunities like that where you can open up your back end and let other people develop applications on top of it, and don't put the limits on it, and instead look, see when the limits get exceeded, see those as opportunities and convert them into businesses at that point, you know, and see it as a good thing when your resources start getting maxed out. And look in that bank account and believe that $60 billion buys you an awful lot of back end, you know, because it does. Anyway, so that's our morning coffee notes. By the way, the song at the beginning, which I'm going to cue up again a little bit as we fade, as we go out. Here, hold on a second. Let me just get this thing on. Oops, that's wrong. Hold on, don't go away. All right, here we go. Come on, let's go. Why isn't this coming on? Yeah. Oh, I know why. Because I have it all turned down. Hold on, don't go away.
634-5555. The Valley Hospital. Doctors and technology at their best.
Nope, that's wrong. Here we go. That's called Medicine Jar. And believe it or not, it's Paul McCartney. Doesn't really sound like it, but it's a beautiful little song, I think. It's off the Venus and Mars album. I wish I knew. You say time will tell. Ooh, that's Morning Coffee Notes. That's a wrap, everybody. Morning Coffee Notes, November 1st, 2005. www.morningcoffeenotes.com. And of course, every day, scripting news at www.scripting.com. This is what we call a podcast, everybody. And I hope you're having a great time. And we'll see you again real soon. Head on your feet, you won't get far. If you keep on sticking your head in the medicine jar. I said, head on your feet, you won't get far.